Hello everyone, welcome back to the Radical Self-Love Video Summit. Today we have Larissa Noonan, and I am going to introduce her. She describes herself as a ritual facilitator, a mentor and healer, who is here to remind those that she serves of the healing, transformation, and growth that is possible when you are connected to your body, to nature, and spirit. She uses the subtle energy work of orthobionomy, which I would love for her to speak about, spiritual practices of nature-based traditions, and a deep grounding of her own personal healing journey, teaching the transformative practice of deep self-care. Hi, Larissa. Welcome to the Radical Self-Love Video Summit. Thank you so much for being part of this.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm honored to be here.
Okay. Thank you. So am I. So I just would like you to maybe perhaps we could start with what is the orthobionomy that you talk about?
Orthobionomy is a form of somatic body work, body, mind, body work that was developed in the 1970s by an osteopathic physician named Arthur Lincoln Pauls. Okay. And he was a judo master initially, and he kept having all of his students get injured and would send them to an osteopath who said, hey, you should just become an osteopath yourself. Mm-hmm. And he did, and then he did various other kind of interesting things. Like, he did a lot of studying in India and really started to learn about mindfulness and those sort of things. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he combined his judo knowledge, which was more about going with the force of things versus against the force of things, okay, with his osteopathic training and with the mindfulness stuff, and developed this really amazing form of healing work called orthobionomy. And in the end, it's really more about helping the client learn how to track their own inner experience, okay, and learn how they're holding themselves, mm-hmm, and be able to hold themselves through whatever they're going through, whether it's physical or emotional, mm-hmm, so that they learn to become their own healer.
Got it. So when you talk about holding ourselves, what do you mean by that?
I mean, when we are in pain, we can either be completely consumed by the pain where it overwhelms our world, okay, or we can be more in this witness, this neutral state in relation to the pain. Mm-hmm. And when we are in relation to pain, there's the opportunity for things to change, for us to be in a place where we're more open to opportunities as they become available to us that we might not have even noticed before.
Okay.
And there's just a lot more potential for healing and transformation.
Yes.
And also, when you are in that place of holding, then you're more able to feel what's happening, mm-hmm, on a deeper level, which allows for healing. Sometimes the resolution can happen just through, mm-hmm, holding yourself in something or being held in something.
Yes. Can you talk a little bit more about how that happens, or give us an example perhaps with a client where that might have happened, or yourself?
Absolutely. Let's see what comes to mind first.
Okay.
Well, the very first thing that comes to mind for me is, as you know, I just went through a big passage last week.
Yes.
And I had a miscarriage, and it was, as you can imagine, extremely varied emotions and feelings, and yeah, physical pain on top of emotional pain.
Yes.
And in that situation, I can either be caught up in the pain, or I can be this more neutral witness, like I was saying, where I'm sinking into my body, mm-hmm, out of the story of what this means for me, of the injustice of it, of the potential, like, you know, it's having all these stories around betrayal and injustice.
Yes.
And I was able to sink out of the stories which were in my head and into my body, where, you know, the sadness lied, actually was. Mm-hmm. You know, I could then just be with the sadness, and then the sadness would pass through, and then, you know, it would come again later, and we would go through this process again. Mm-hmm. But it was a, you know, I walked through it with a relative amount of ease, especially compared to another time when I had a similar experience.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I teach my clients, is how to be in that space where,
yes,
you don't have to be consumed by your experiences, but can more be with them.
Yes.
Be in a relationship with them that leads to healing.
And, you know, I would say to you that on the surface, it almost sounds like a conflict, in that, you know, you were able to be with your sadness. I think most people are afraid to go there because they're afraid to be consumed. They're afraid to get lost in all of that.
Yes.
But really what's happening is in the resistance, if I'm getting you correctly, is in the resistance, that's when we're actually getting consumed.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it.
Okay.
And yes, you're absolutely correct as well that, you know, it's a very scary thing to go in and to let ourselves really feel what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I think it's really important to have skills and tools that allow us to do it in a safe way, in a gentle way,
mm-hmm.
and that allow us to kind of take things from the edges in. We don't just jump right into the middle of it, because then we can be completely overwhelmed, and that can lead to, you know, furthering of the pain versus any resolution. And we really want to be able to do this in a way that where we are resourced.
Yes.
We don't just get overwhelmed and consumed by what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And by resources, I mean, it's also very helpful to have somebody guide you through it, to
yes.
have somebody
Absolutely.
Witness with you, right, throughout the process.
Yes. And, you know, I wouldn't be able to do these things myself if I hadn't had, you know, so many people who were able to hold that space for me and, mm-hmm. and teach me skills that allowed me to be able to do it for myself eventually.
Yes.
You know, and through this, you know, last passage as well, you know, I had people who were holding me and who I knew I could call if I needed extra support. And, you know, I had a lot of love surrounding me as well. And mm-hmm. so that is very helpful too, when you're going through something and you're kind of your primary resource.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
On this one, it does, yeah.
Okay.
And so I just kind of want to connect that to, you talk about this deeper place of knowing or going in deeper into ourselves. So there may not necessarily be a noticeable incident that takes us to a place where we want to go deeper in our lives. Mm-hmm. And you talk about in your website how, you know, many of us have done a lot of work. We may have gone to therapy, workshops, read self-help books, but we still haven't accessed that deeper place. And so there's two questions that are floating in my head. I guess one of them is, what is this deeper place that you're talking about? And secondly, do you use this method that you were talking about to pass through your emotions, to be the witness to your emotions? Do you use that to get to your deeper knowing?
So I would say that when there isn't like a big crisis or something going on that says, okay, I need healing, I need help with this.
Yes.
When you've done a lot of work, the way that you would know that there's something else coming up that you're ready to work with is there's still something in your life that's kind of eating at you.
Yes.
You know, maybe it's just that you have a pattern of difficult relationships, whether in intimate relationships or in work, or you have this like project in your work that you just can't get to, or you're really stuck around, mm-hmm. or you have just little weird things that just keep happening to you that tell you that you're just off in some way. And, you know, sometimes these things can be fairly subtle.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to something like going through, you know, a divorce or a big acute injury or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me, when these little things happen that keep eating at us, it is a call to come deeper into ourselves.
Okay.
And, you know, what I find is that if we're paying attention to these like, you know, more subtle signs, mm-hmm. they will lead us inward to something that we might not expect, to something that we might not have had any idea even was within us, whether it's, you know, say grief or some gift.
Yes, yes.
Or possibly both.
Yeah.
For example.
Yeah. And more often than not, right? Because
what was that?
I was going to say more often than not, we might be surprised because we haven't gone to that deeper place perhaps, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
But yet it's there asking for us to come to it. You know, one of the primary things that when people came to me, one of the things that we start with is starting to notice how much we live in our heads versus in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's very good reasons for why we are in our heads, you know, especially if we have had any trauma in our history, which we all have trauma in our history. So by trauma, I mean unresolved trauma.
Yes.
And so, you know, there's usually, like you were saying, like there might be things that we're afraid of overwhelming us and consuming us if we go into our bodies, because, you know, it's in our bodies where our emotions really lie, where these different physical sensations lie that we mm-hmm. may be afraid to face, which is very normal. And yes, of course we would be afraid to face these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the first thing that we start doing is learning skills and ways to start dropping into our bodies that are safe so that we can start meeting these feelings mm-hmm. in a way that allows for resolution. Mm-hmm. And so I teach different skills that allow for that to happen.
Okay, great. So when you guide your clients through to their feelings, to the feelings that reside within their body, is there some sort of message that comes to them, or, you know, are they trying to interpret, like, what happens there?
That's a great question. It really depends on the person. You know, some people are visual, so they might have like some like vision of something. Okay. They might receive some message that way. Other people are auditory. They might hear something. Yeah. For me, I'm mostly kinesthetic. And a lot of my clients seem to be kinesthetic too, meaning that we just feel things in our bodies.
Okay.
And so if I'm leading someone into sinking into their bodies, they might become aware of this like really intense tension in their solar plexus, for instance.
Okay.
And get like this really clear sense of this, just this somatic pattern in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And then through, you know, holding it and watching it from more of this neutral standpoint, that sensation in the body starts to shift. Maybe it'll actually become more intense for a bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll turn into an ache versus a, you know, a tension feeling. Maybe it'll start feeling more raw. You know, we don't know what's going to happen, but this journey starts unfolding.
Uh-huh.
That we then like are able to just be with and watch. And eventually, you know, it could go anywhere. Emotions might start to arise. Maybe an old memory will come up. Maybe we'll just be sitting with the physical sensation.
Yes.
You know, I'll be doing some energetic work with my hands. You know, even I work over Skype with people, but mm-hmm. I might do energy work as I'm working. And so, you know, I'll be holding it energetically too, which helps the process feel more supported and helps it resolve a little faster as well.
Yeah.
Or I might sing some healing songs to bring in some different energies. You know, there's a lot of different ways that it can go from there.
Uh-huh. All right. But it sounds like really the person that you're treating or working with is really the one who is getting to that place of knowing, so that it's possible for you to do this kind of thing over Skype, right? I mean, the power lies within them to discover.
Yes.
Okay, yes.
And you know, I when I started my healing journey, I didn't know how to sink into my body. I didn't know how to do any of these things. My body was pretty much numb. Either that or it would be completely like so many feelings that I had no idea what was happening, and I couldn't discern or decipher anything.
Yes.
And I think that's pretty common for a lot of people.
Yes.
And so, you know, it is something that takes practice. It takes time. And there are ways to help it happen
mm-hmm.
in a way that it unfolds really naturally and easily, yeah. and with a lot more grace and speed than the way like I went through it, for instance.
Got it.
I had to learn all these things along the way.
Got it. Okay. What propelled you to do some of the work?
Oh, I'm just thinking way back. Where to even start? I have a history of migraines, and so
mm-hmm.
I've always been looking for something that can help me work with them and be with them.
Yep.
And, you know, that has kind of led me into pretty much nothing would work consistently.
Okay.
So it kept leading me to, like, you know, different things.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, you know, it led me back to myself and to this whole process of, like, getting to know myself. And, you know, for me, a lot of the migraines were about repressed emotions on top of, you know, structural things through my neck and head and all these different pieces as well.
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, learning how to be able to feel my emotions without having to react out from them,
uh-huh.
because I used to really just repress them and stuff them because I didn't want to react and look stupid or hurt someone or something. And so I had this pattern of intense repression. Mm-hmm. that I had to work through. And then when I started to be able to allow myself to feel the feelings, it was really overwhelming at first because they would all just come forward at the same time.
Yes.
And so, you know, learning skills, I was kind of desperate to have skills that would mm-hmm. help me with both the physical pain and then with all these emotions that were coming up and coming out.
Yes.
So, I, you know, that's pretty big motivation, or at least it was for me.
All right. I had a question in my head and I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, you talked about, you know, that the migraines are what spurred you into this process, but then, you know, it was about coming back to yourself, right? Why do you think it's so important for us to come back to ourselves?
Hmm.
I know that's a big question.
It's a huge question. The simplest answer is that we're kinder people to ourselves and to others and to the earth. Mm-hmm. When we're really in touch with ourselves and we can feel what's happening in our bodies, mm-hmm. you know, for instance, if we're being mean to someone else, we're going to feel how that hurts in ourselves, and we're not going to do it because we're not going to want to do that.
Absolutely.
And the same with, you know, being mean, if we're like, you know, saying, having really damaging or some, you know, thoughts about ourselves, mm-hmm. like we're going to feel how that hurts.
Yes.
So we're going to have motivation to maybe not do that.
For sure.
I think that's a simple answer. We're just kinder people.
Yes. And it sounds like, you know, we're connected more, we feel more, and yes. therefore, you know, that kind of filters into all our relationships as well, right?
Yes. And we begin to make better decisions because we can feel what's really aligned within us with, you know, with our hearts, with our bodies, with our, you know, our spirit path. When we're not connected with our bodies, we can't feel these things. And so we're just kind of waiting, you know, waiting through murky waters, you know, we're just kind of like, you know, in the dark flailing, and we don't really know where to go or what to do. And mm-hmm. That's a really painful place to be.
Yes. Yes. I think about this movie. I don't know if you ever saw it, but it was called Powder. I think it was called Powder. But the main character in it, his nickname was Powder because he was bald and he was extremely white. He was born without pigment. So he didn't have any hair and was very white himself. But for reasons that I'm not going to go into because it's a long story, but he had these this power to really feel, to really intuit everything that was going on around him. And almost to the point where he could actually predict people's thoughts, you know, or people's actions. And at one point he gets put into an all-boys school, but the boys are really, really rough and tough, right? And, you know, he first appears there and he's just so innocent because he had been living in a basement for 16 years of his life, that he was just, you know, doing these really sort of innocent gestures or tricks, and the boys that were really, really tough and were the bullies of the school started to bully him. And anyways, the school went on a hunting trip, and you know, this boy Powder didn't really know what was going to go on, but the leader, one of the teachers, shot a deer. And so what Powder did was he put his hand to the deer's neck as it was dying and put his hand to the person who shot him. So mm. feel the impact, right?
Mm-hmm.
So hardened by their own circumstances in life, which is why they were in this all-boys school. So he was this connection because he yeah. felt it so deeply, right? And so when you're talking about how this makes us better people when we feel, when we connect to our bodies, because that's where our feelings reside, that's what shows up for me. And it always has such a huge impact on me, you know, just thinking about that movie. And that, you know, if we were to become more feeling and connected people, the world would be a much better place to live in, obviously. And our lives would be much, smoother running, more flowing, you know, perhaps with more joy, we might be able to be more present, you know, to the moment and so on and so forth, right?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, and when hardship comes, you're going to be able to be with that too and walk through it without getting caught up in it and then having it to, then it ending up landing in your nervous system and staying with you for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's all there, and it's, you know, life becomes just much more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Feel it all.
Yes. Yes. Okay, great. I want to bring up this other thing that you talked about in your website. You talked about some of the activities that you you go through with your clients, and you talked about a client who had wanted a particular result to an activity, and that was to be energized. But do you remember that? And then she achieved deep calm and a sleepiness. But I love the context in which that you put that in, because it was, you know, did she fail at this? Well, of course not. She didn't fail necessarily. So I just thought maybe I'd ask you to talk a little bit about that, because I think it's important for us to realize that when we're shooting for a particular outcome and it doesn't give us that outcome, there's still something else we can get from that.
Yes. I think with that article, I was talking about how taking this viewpoint of being more of a scientist or and running experiments on your own life.
Yes.
And how, you know, if you want to feel something or you want to experience something in your life and you try something hoping to get that result and it happens, awesome. But if it doesn't happen, you know, what result did you get? Mm-hmm. And is that a result that you might want at some other time in your life?
Yes.
That you can then say, oh, okay, I can do that because this is what I want now. Mm-hmm. It just sets up this idea that I want to back up just a little bit and just say, you know, we have this idea in our culture, or at least I was raised thinking that it's really not okay to take risks or to fail. Mm-hmm. And so, so if it's not okay to fail and you have to succeed at everything you do, it's really hard to try new things.
Yes.
And it's really hard to take any risks. And, you know, a risk could be just like trying a different flavor of tea for your morning beverage, you know, I mean, it could be that simple.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And so, you know, I just want to, you know, it's something that feels really important to me is that we have give ourselves more permission to fail and give ourselves more permission to realize that what we might think is a failure might not actually be a failure. It's just, we tried something. It worked this way instead of this way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what can we learn from that? And, and why can't we celebrate that we learned something versus that it didn't work the way we thought we wanted it to?
Yes. Yes. And I think that to a large part, you know, like you said, speaks to the context, right, that we come from when we're trying something new. You know, for you, it was about, you know, perhaps if it doesn't work out, that it means failure, right? Yeah. Or I guess, you know, failure in and of itself is not a bad thing, but it's what the, you know, the meaning that we attach to failure, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And I have another post that was several years ago, but he's talking about magnificent failure. And I'm not sure, have you heard of the, are you familiar with the, with Martin Prechtel?
No.
The indigenous shaman, and he's from in the Mayan tradition.
Okay.
And he talks about this concept of magnificent failure, which I just think is amazing. And the idea is that compared to the holy in nature, compared to how beautiful and perfect nature is, this world is on its own. There's nothing that humans can ever do that will come even close to comparing.
Yes.
So no matter what we do, it's a failure automatically. So coming from that perspective, the idea is to fail as magnificently as possible.
Got it.
So you know, this gives you all sorts of permission to go out and just do these things that we want to do and to put our hearts into everything without having to be afraid of failure or being afraid of having our hearts broken, because we already know we're going to fail. Because there's no, no, it's impossible not to fail when compared to just the perfection that already is in the natural world.
Nice. I like that. What is the name of the shaman?
Martin Prechtel.
Prechtel. How do you spell that name?
Prechtel, perhaps, or I might have the CH and T's mixed up, but if he'll pop up very, very easily. Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you. The other question or the other topic that I wanted to talk to you about was something you had also put in your website called The Agony of Waiting.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And so you talk about the gift of now, right? You also talk about, you know, how much waiting was involved in having your son.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that in the process, you became more present to the now, right?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's... you know, this is a pattern that it was just really exemplified by the pregnancy and the birth of my son, but that I you know, looking back over my life, I can see was just winding throughout every aspect of my life. Mm. And I think it's also another kind of common cultural thing where, you know, we're taught, okay, you finish your schooling, then you'll have a job. You get married, then your life begins, or you have children, or, you know, like there's all these things that, or even if you want to take it even further to like more of the Christian belief, like you wait till you die and then you go to heaven and then like the good thing happens.
Yes.
And so it's kind of just pervasive. It's built into our culture, this idea that there's always something better,
yeah,
which might not be true. for one thing.
Yes.
And for another, when you're living in that place of waiting for the good thing to happen, you miss everything that's present right now. You miss the sound of the rain falling outside your window, the mm-hmm. birds that start to wake up in the morning. Mm. You miss, you even miss the pain, for instance, you know, in some degree, because mm-hmm. you're not really present with it. And I happen to, you know, believe that when we allow ourselves to feel pain, we are then able to feel more joy.
Yes.
So, you know, we miss the sound of the rain. We miss the aches in our bodies. Mm-hmm. This, that deep peace that comes when you're just here. Mm-hmm. Going through a really difficult pregnancy and birth, and just, you know, all of a sudden it was just so obvious to me how I kept, well, 3 more weeks and then everything will be better, according to the internet. Now, I think I'm supposed to work with infants, which is not that all the way things went for mine. Or 3 more months or this or that. And it was just like, I don't want to be there anymore. I want to be right here. And yes, I'm exhausted. Yes, my body is in a lot of physical pain. Yes, I have all this like grief that I haven't been able to process yet from how the birth went. Yeah. And my baby is here in my arms, and I'm here. And I have, I'm in a home, I'm safe. There's, you know, there's all these, it can all exist at once.
Yes.
And I find that the more that I can really become present in my body with everything, the more I can hold all these mm-hmm. Seemingly opposite experiences at the same time.
Yes.
And it's really beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. That sounds wonderful. I mean, I think about, you know, when I had my son 14 years ago, mm-hmm. It was also a very, you know, long labor. It was 34 hours long. Tried to have it naturally in a pool in the house and, you know, had to have a C-section.
Very similar story.
10 hours after that. So we were able to bring him home about 5 days later. Mm-hmm. And when I finally had a moment of silence, you know, because in the hospital everything's so chaotic, but when I was sitting in my kitchen with him in my chair and there was a moment of silence because my partner had gone shopping, because we hadn't had food for however many days, but all of a sudden I had this, I don't know what you want to call it, but just this image or this picture of him being a grown man and leaving the house, you know? You know, it just brought me to tears and I was crying a little bit, but I think, you know, in some ways it just had me really present to what I had now in that moment as well. So that, you know, I think that moving in and out of the present, it's kind of like, you know, having that contrast, right? Without pain, we don't know our health, you know, you know, without the rain, you know, we don't know that we have in pains in our bodies, but with, you know, without that experience, we also don't know what it's like to not have aches and pains and actually enjoy that. Right.
Yes. Yes. Cause maybe we sink into our bodies and our bodies feel really amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So we need that contrast from time to time, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Or else we don't really appreciate, you know, how well things are working in our lives.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess the other thing that struck me when you were talking about, you know, the rain and the pains in our bodies and so on and so forth is just how connected we really are to nature.
Yes.
And you use a lot of that in your practice, right?
I do. Absolutely. For me, it's one of the, like, it's one of the key resources. I mean, I don't think we are meant to live disconnected from nature in the way that we do. Yeah. And so when we start to connect again, even if it's just a little bit, like it starts to connect us back to our deeper, truer mm-hmm. natures as well. Mm-hmm. So it's another way to bridge that gap between the head and the body, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's another way to begin to come into a relationship with ourselves that's mm-hmm. a little deeper and a little more meaningful and where we just start feeling again. And I use, there's so much I want to say here. Maybe I'll let you ask another question.
No, please go ahead. I would love to hear it.
Oh my goodness. We talked a little bit before about the importance of being resourced when we start to work with these different feelings in ourselves that we have not been able to be with before. Mm-hmm. And for me, nature is one of the biggest resources. Like I will, one of the rituals that I love facilitating is taking people out and having them wander through the forest until they find a tree that really calls to them. And then talking to the tree and letting that tree hold the healing space for them. Mm-hmm. And I do this. This is one of my, like, when I am feeling that super vulnerable place where, especially before I started becoming kind of okay sharing the deeper vulnerabilities of myself with people, mm-hmm. I would go to a tree. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to the tree, and the tree would hold the space for me, and I would be able to cry and shake mm-hmm. and be in this really raw place without having to let anyone see me. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was a really helpful starting place to be able to then, you know, access these feelings within myself in a safe way.
Yes.
In a safe, supported way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah, it's you know, it's an amazing thing. Or you can go to the water and, you know, talk to the water, tell the water your problems. You know, there's just the way nature can really hold us.
Yes.
In a way that's really profound. It's.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, sometimes people really, you know, heal through baths or through saunas or through, you know, those are natural ways to really be in tune with yourself and to just release.
Yeah.
Some of the things that you've been holding in. So I really love that.
Yes. And there's something about, you know, for me, at least when I get into nature, like those feelings just come up naturally.
Yes.
I don't have to go digging around for them. There's something about just how alive and how true nature is that calls to that within me.
Yes.
Those aspects of myself. And then whatever's in the way of that trueness of myself comes up and out naturally. Like there isn't any forcing. It's amazing.
Got it. So you practice this with the clients that you see in your office, perhaps, right? Where you take them out to the woods?
I that's a yes and a no question. through working with me individually, like over Skype, there might be some homework that comes up that involves, like, maybe you perhaps doing that yourself.
Got it.
I also facilitate rituals where I take people to the trees or to the waters when that's more of a group event, more of a community event.
Got it.
So yes, yes and no.
But it makes sense.
And I do want to speak, if I may, jump in here for a second.
Please.
You know, just briefly as well to another piece that's very, very crucial to the work that I do with people. And that is helping people connect with their healthy ancestors, with their lineage.
Okay.
And, you know, this goes back again to, you know, like trauma and to, patterns in our life that aren't working or patterns of pain or dysfunction, and how some of those can come from our own lifetime, but a lot of times it's like it's coming from intergenerational, mm-hmm. from you know, generations back. You know, that's really obvious when you look at like patterns of alcoholism running through families or depression or even the gifts running through families, like, you know, gifts for drawing or for singing. Mm-hmm. And we kind of often look at these things and we're like, well, those are kind of set in stone because, you know, my grandmother had depression, my father had depression, I have depression, like, it's just how things are. And in my experience, that's not true. And there's a lot of these things that kind of feel very core to us mm-hmm. that we might not even know can shift, that can shift through working with nature and with working with our ancestry.
Yes. So when you talk about, you know, that these things feel very, you know, at the core for us, you're talking about things like alcoholism and depression and so on and so forth. Is that what you mean?
It could be that. It could be feelings of scarcity, patterns of scarcity.
Yeah.
It could be just not ever really knowing your purpose or what you're really here to do and kind of being in this place of feeling lost all the time.
Yes.
It could be random accidents happening, like looking at my lineage, my grandfather had a really bad car accident that he never really recovered from. Mm-hmm. And my dad has had like random accidents after random accidents after random accidents. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to, like, when you start looking at patterns and tracing them back, how much of what we experienced in our lives.
Yes.
You can trace back through the generations.
Yes.
And it's, you realize then that it's not just our own personal tragedy in a way, like there's more to it. Mm-hmm. And it also opens the door to another resource for healing.
Yes. And there have been many examples where people change, you know, the legacy or change the family sort of history. I mean, things like, you know, alcoholism, like you talked about, or sexual abuse, or you know, to name some of the bigger, you know,
the more obvious ones.
Yeah, the more obvious ones, but, you know, the more less obvious ones, such as, you know, coming from a place of scarcity or feeling as though, you know, you can't take any risks and all of that kind of stuff.
That's another really good one.
Yeah. Passed on through generations as well. Would you say that it gets, you know, imprinted in ourselves, or that it's, you know, somewhere in our bodies as well?
You mean these patterns?
Yeah, how does it work?
I would say it's both. You know, there is the science of epigenetics that is showing how, you know, genes can be turned on and off depending on trauma, and how if your grandmother has a trauma and a specific gene gets turned off, then that pattern can continue to be passed on down.
Yes.
So the answer, you know, from what I'm seeing at this point, is both.
Yes. Okay.
But nurture and nature.
What's that?
Nurture and nature.
Yeah, absolutely. But we have the power to shift that and transform that, right?
Yes. On even a genetic level.
Yes.
You know, if a gene can be turned off or turned on, it can also be turned back off or on.
Yes. Okay. All right. So there may be some genes that we may want to actually turn back off or on. I mean, there may be, you know, perhaps ones that are dormant that we would like to...
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, there's most likely a lot of gifts and blessings in our lineages that we're not receiving because you know, something has stopped it or blocked it in a way. And, you know, I think all these things, like, you know, the connecting with nature, these learning how to get into our bodies, these are all paths for healing.
Got it. That
help us come to a more whole place again.
Yes. Okay. Great. So, Larissa, if you have one message that you would like the listeners to leave with.
Oh, my.
Yeah. What would you like that to be?
I would like it to be that it is possible to heal, to change, to grow. Like, no matter how dark or even just blah your life might be in this moment.
Yes.
It's possible to change. Mm-hmm. And it's possible to become, you know, who you're really meant to be, and to know yourself on a deep level that will allow you to give your full gifts out into the world.
Yes. Okay. All right. Thank you. And you're offering a special gift as well.
I'm offering a mini e-course. It's one of my favorite techniques. It's actually the first tool that I teach pretty much everyone that comes to work with me. And it's owl eyes, which if you have done any naturalist work, you might be familiar with. It's going into your peripheral vision. Mm. And it's what I found is it's a really remarkable tool for helping to feel overwhelming feelings. So when we're starting to sink into our bodies and we're starting to encounter these areas in our bodies that are holding challenging and potentially overwhelming emotions and sensations, this is a tool that can be very helpful to help us go to that place of more neutral witness where we can hold our experience versus being consumed by it.
Yes.
So for me, it's a tool that I use all the time for myself, with my clients, and that I think can change the world if everyone would start to do. So.
Okay, great.
That's what I'm offering today.
Okay, thank you for that.
Yeah.
So I just want to thank you for being part of the summit.
Thank you.
I want to acknowledge you for your authenticity and your wealth of knowledge that you offered on the summit today. And it was a real pleasure talking to you and getting to know you.
Yes, I enjoyed it very much as well. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome, Larissa. Bye-bye.